Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Chicken Soup for the Soul, The Magic of Dogs, 101 Tales of Family, Friendship, and Fun, by Amy Newmark. Narrated by Steve Marvel and Rebecca Gibble. Chapter 1. Magical, Miraculous Dogs. 1. Hope in Red. The bond with a true dog is as lasting as the ties of this earth will ever be. Conrad Lawrence. We were newlyweds, and cash was tight, so Jeannie and I moved into our first, and what would turn out to be our only, house under a rent-to-own arrangement. Of course, if we decided not to buy the house, we'd be required to move out, leaving it in the same condition as when we'd moved in. Problem was, no one told Ruby that was the deal. Ruby was a red and white border collie, which is rare. Most border collies are black and white. When I say red, I really mean chestnut. That's important because Jeannie also had striking chestnut-colored hair. Jeannie's hair was long and glorious, and it really flamed red when the sun hit it. Maybe their shared color was why Jeannie picked Ruby from a litter of eight. Ruby was only 6 weeks old and not much larger than a guinea pig when she first stepped into the house. She seemed far too young and way too small to be making decorating decisions, yet she started assessing the house. The only thing she lacked was a clipboard. Now, assessing and acting are two different things, so we didn't worry about it initially. But Ruby started making changes without consulting us. Maybe she knew we'd object, and border collies don't like being told they're wrong. Ruby lived up to the notion that border collies are the smartest dog breed. She had no problem outfoxing us. Even before the candles on her welcome home cake had burned out, Ruby had taken down wallpaper and removed copious amounts of wood trim. She started in unused rooms that were out of our flight path. We simply didn't see what she was doing. She slept under a certain bed in a spare room. She removed the carpet under that bed, but only while Jeannie and I were out of the house. We never figured out why. Was the carpet too soft, or did it make her sneeze? Neither Jeannie nor I loved the house. It wasn't a style we would have bought, but because of Ruby's changes, we did buy it. We had to. It would have cost too much to fix all that she had, changed. Did we discipline her? No. We merely acquiesced, and we wound up staying in that house for the rest of our marriage, some 20 years. We made it our house, with even more of Ruby's decorating assistance. Looking back on it, I see it was one of the smartest things we ever did. Ruby had other peculiar traits, such as chasing flying geese, not cats, dogs, or geese milling around on the ground. Nope, it had to be flying geese, those already in the air. It started in our unfenced backyard one day when a skein of geese flew overhead. They squawked, which caught Ruby's attention. In a flash of red, she took off and kept running, even with us calling and chasing her. She ran as fast as the wind. We lost sight of her, and she ran through the woods behind our house. She always came back after her fruitless goose chases, and she never gave up, even when she got older and arthritis moved into her joints. One day, Jeannie asked, "Doesn't she realize she's not going to catch them? Why does she keep running so hard? It's got to hurt." I thought a minute. "I don't think it's about catching them. I think they're a guide." "For what?" "Maybe it's about getting to the other side of the horizon," I said. "Maybe if we can get there, we can leave this world behind and know peace." "What? Like heaven? If only," Jeannie said. A few years later, Jeannie was diagnosed with breast cancer. After having a mastectomy and enduring chemotherapy, she was declared cancer-free. We kept our fingers crossed. A year later, Ruby died, with no indication that anything was wrong. She simply dropped dead. In fact, the day before, she'd run after the geese that flew by. Jeannie and I had seen other dogs get sick and die. We knew how ugly things could get, protracted and painful. But like with everything else involving Ruby, she did it her way. There was no lingering or suffering. She just blew past all that. Occasionally, Jeannie and I talked about Ruby's life and death. Jeannie would say, "Maybe Ruby wanted to make sure she knew the route to take, you know, to get to heaven." Jeannie had never been a big believer in religion, but having cancer changed things. A few years later, Jeannie's cancer came back. It was now an aggressive killer. All the treatments failed. On the afternoon she started hospice, I found Jeannie standing at the window. She always had to see nature. Without turning, she said, "I haven't seen any flying geese in a long time." She was right. We'd been having a brutally hot summer, and the geese that were still around were hunkered down at the river, trying to stay cool. She said, "If Ruby were here, she'd find the geese, and she'd make them fly. Then I'd know which way to go." The next morning, with Jeannie in a wheelchair, we went for a walk. It was early, around 6:30. Though there's light in the sky then, there are many more shadows, and maybe a hint of surprise. I walked Jeannie through the garden and stopped at the edge of a large, wide lawn. I situated the wheelchair so Jeannie would have a view of the distant horizon as it changed colors from dark indigo blue to a softer daytime hue. Taking a seat next to her, I took her hand and stared at the horizon. I was wishing, hoping, and praying. Then it came, a noise from behind, far at first, then closer, a rhythmic whooshing sound. Geese flew so close over our heads that we could have reached up and touched their goose-down bellies. Softly, Jeannie said, "Ruby." The geese flew into the most peaceful of early morning blues. Behind, in the eastern sky, the direction from which the geese had come, the sun had burst into the sky. It came in with startling color, oranges, yellows, and reds. But would anyone argue if I said I saw some chestnut sprinkled in? David Weiskircher.
2. Love at First Sight. Dogs have a way of finding the people who need them, filling an emptiness we don't even know we have. Tom Jones. I grew up in the city, so moving to the country with my fiancé Dylan was a challenge. He was working away from home 2 weeks at a time. I had a cat I loved, but I wanted the companionship of a dog. However, I still worked in the city and was gone from home at least 10 hours a day. It would be irresponsible to get a dog. So I did what many people do when they are a bit lonely and can't have a dog. I started volunteering at the local humane society. I wanted to interact with the dogs, but with my work schedule and experience, the volunteer coordinator decided that I was better suited to work at the front desk. Every Tuesday, I filed, answered phones, greeted visitors, and helped families begin the adoption process. I got to know some of the adoption counselors. Many of them had adopted from the shelter. They would say the same thing. "You love all the animals that come through, but sometimes one will grab your heart, and you realize you have no choice but to adopt it." I had been volunteering for more than a year when a couple walked in with a sad, scared, and sick one-year-old boxer collie mix. Her name was Bella, and one look at her ripped my heart wide open. The couple who were surrendering her had tried to take care of her after their neighbors moved away and left her behind. After a few weeks, Bella was healthy enough to be put out on the adoption floor. My heart sank. Bella had scored incredibly well on her behavior test. She was good with cats, kids, and other dogs. She was the trifecta of adoptability. After I promised to bring her a coffee the following week, the adoption supervisor let me in to visit Bella after the building closed. I stayed with her for 15 minutes, trying to convince myself that it still wasn't a great time to get a dog. Anyway, Dylan had just left for 2 weeks, so he couldn't meet her. The Humane Society had a rule that potential adopters had to spend time with the dog at the shelter before they could be approved. I couldn't ask for special treatment just because I volunteered there, and it really wasn't the right time to adopt a dog. But when I returned the following Tuesday with the promised coffee, I ran to see if Bella was still there. She was. I had another visit with her and said goodbye, knowing deep down that it was for good. For months, all I talked about was Bella, how she had been my first case of love at first sight, and how I wondered if I would ever feel that way about another dog. That spring, Dylan took a job where he no longer had to work away from home. One Saturday in June, we were grocery shopping in the city when we saw that a local rescue was putting on a dog adoption fair. We walked over and met a few dogs, but none of them was a fit for us. We decided to drive over to the Humane Society. I looked at the adoptable dogs on their website as we were driving and saw a dog named Penelope who reminded me of Bella. We arrived and asked to meet her. An adoption counselor I had never met before took us into a shared office and started reading us Penelope's file. Halfway in, I turned to an adoption counselor I knew, who was working at the desk beside us, and said, "This sounds like Bella's file from back in December." He nodded and said, "Yeah, it is Bella. They just changed her name." I started to cry. This was my love-at-first-sight dog. I didn't understand why she had been given up for a third time, and I didn't care. We knew we were taking her home with us before Dylan even met her. I cried the entire way home with Bella in the back seat, happily hanging her head out the window. And I cried again when we called our families to tell them we were doggy parents. Now, 2.5 years later, she is sitting beside me on the couch, trying to lick my face because she doesn't understand that the tears on my face are happy tears. We should have stopped and bought a lottery ticket the day of her adoption, because it was the luckiest day of our lives. AJ Cross Nunez. 3. Dogged Determination. He is your friend, your partner, your defender, your dog. You are his life, his love, his leader. He will be yours, faithful and true to the last beat of his heart. Author unknown. My grandmother Nina greeted me at the door when I returned from school. Wrapping her arms around me, she explained, "Your daddy is very sick. While you were at school today, an ambulance came and took him to the hospital." While I cried in her arms, our boxer, Buddy, sat beside us waiting to be of service. Eventually, I slipped to the floor and buried my face in his warm fur. His dark eyes looked sad, too. Buddy was more than just a pet. He was a family member, and he was missing Daddy, too. As I walked home from school the next day, I knew my father would still be in the hospital. Mama would have to go to work every day, but in the evenings, she would keep watch at Daddy's side. I prayed for good news. Maybe he would be coming home soon. In the meantime, Nina, Buddy, and I would wait together. Turning the knob of the big oak door, I called out, "Nina, Buddy, I'm home!" Silence greeted me. I'd expected the thunderous sound of Buddy galloping to the door. There should have been a deep yelp of excitement, too, as he ran toward me, ready to shower me with after-school kisses and drool. Only my grandmother crept quietly into the room, though, with tears in her eyes. "Is Daddy okay? Where's Buddy?" I asked, my voice cracking with fear at the sight of Nina crying. "Your daddy is still in the hospital, but I'm sure he's getting better," she said. "Buddy, though, is he outside?" I asked, running through the house to look out the back door. Buddy's world was limited to the house and a large fenced-in backyard. He was a giant of a dog, much too big for me to walk. Mama and Daddy worked so much that they didn't have time to take him on walks. I couldn't ever remember Buddy riding in the car either. If he wasn't in the house, he had to be in the backyard. There was simply no other place he could be. "He's not here," my grandmother said softly. "We don't know where he is." "Buddy!" I shrieked, and then dissolved into tears. That evening was cold and lonely. Buddy was absent from his usual corner in the kitchen while Nina and I ate dinner. I played with my food as I stared at Buddy's empty corner. Later, I stretched out on the floor to watch television before bedtime. Normally, Buddy would be stretched alongside me, keeping me warm in the winter and making me hot in the summer. Buddy had simply been there my whole life. Now, my best friend in the world and lifelong companion was gone. The next day, I walked home from school slowly. It was hard to be excited about coming in from the cold when my daddy was in the hospital and my dog was nowhere to be found. As I turned the corner onto our street, I saw Mama's car in the driveway. She wasn't supposed to be home until visiting hours at the hospital were over, which was after my bedtime. Filled with uncertainty, I ran the rest of the way home and up the steps to the front door. "Mama!" I called out as I burst inside. In response, I heard a thudding of paws pounding on the hardwood floors, followed by the excited yelp I knew so well. Buddy ran to me. My face was soon drenched as I cried tears of happiness, while Buddy showered me with kisses. "I'm not sure who missed who the most," Mama said, as she came into the room. "Did Buddy find his way home all by himself?" I asked. "Not exactly," Mama said. "Wash your hands and face. I'll tell you about it over a snack at the table. You're going to need to sit down to hear this." I ran through the house, with Buddy once again in his natural place as my oversized shadow. Returning to the kitchen in record time, I sat in a chair with Buddy leaning against me. His normal spot in the corner of the kitchen was simply too far away for either of us at the moment. "This afternoon, your grandmother received a call saying that someone had found Buddy," Mama said. "She phoned me at work and I left right away to pick him up." "That's great," I exclaimed. "It's a good thing we had our phone number on his tags. Was he far away?"
"I suppose that depends on your point of view," Mama said. "I don't understand."
Nina and Mama were sitting on either side of me at the table, smiling. Buddy had slid down to the floor and was sleeping beneath my chair. He was obviously exhausted from his outing. "You know Daddy is at the Veterans Hospital," Mama began.
"I know. He went there in an ambulance the other day while I was at school," I replied, confused by the turn our conversation was taking. Mama nodded at the massive lump of fur and jowls beneath my chair. "That's where Buddy was found. He was sitting outside the hospital door, apparently hoping someone would let him in."
"Buddy went all the way to the hospital to see Daddy? How?"
"I have no idea how he tracked your father there, but he did," Mama mused, bending down to scratch Buddy's favorite spot just behind his ears. "We'll never know the details of his little adventure."
"It simply baffles me," Nina said. "Not only is it quite a distance, but your father rode to the hospital in an ambulance. There couldn't possibly be a scent to track."
Mama replied, "Buddy may not have had much of a scent to follow, but he didn't need it. He had other guiding forces, like sheer determination and love." Linda Kinnaman. 4. My two grand dogs. This is not a goodbye, my darling. This is a thank you. Nicholas Sparks. Heidi came flying out of a thick stand of mountain laurel and pounced, scaring me to death and almost knocking me over. Smokey followed, charging me before turning and pushing away her sister. Standing on their hind legs, their front legs pawing my shoulders and each other, they danced circles around me, vying for my attention as we inched toward my neighbor's house where they lived. As many times as I'd watched the pair, I should have been ready for their welcoming antics. However, my brilliant grand dogs loved to hide in the woods and never would attack from the same place twice. Why were they my grand dogs?
Our mutt, Honus, had fathered the dogs with a purebred, short-haired German shepherd. While Heidi looked like her mom, Smokey had shaggy brown and black hair and larger ears. Our family adored them and got to spend a lot of time taking care of them over the years. We loved them as much as our own dogs. Along with their traditional welcome attack, my grand dogs had a farewell custom. Heidi would sit, kiss me goodbye, and then watch her sister walk me home down the long gravel driveway. "Come on, girl, come with us," I'd say, but Heidi always refused. Smokey would stay by my side until her invisible fence collar beeped. Then she'd sit, kiss me goodbye, and watch me walk the rest of the way. Once I turned left out of sight, she'd let out a mournful howl. When Smokey lost her battle with cancer years later, her death devastated Heidi, who was now alone during the long hours our neighbors were away at work. When the neighbor told me they couldn't do anything to make Heidi happy and they wanted to put her to sleep, my heart skipped a beat. I'd already lost one grand dog. I couldn't imagine losing another. Since I was home, I promised to visit Heidi several times throughout the day. We played. I spoiled her with treats and gave her a lot of love. Heidi and I grew closer than ever, and she seemed much better. Every time I left Heidi, I had high hopes that she'd take Smokey's place and walk home with me. I always pleaded, but to no avail. Months later, my neighbors had to leave town unexpectedly for an extended period. There wasn't time to board Heidi, and they couldn't take her with them. For months, I'd visited throughout the day, so it wasn't a big deal for me to care for her in the evenings. For several weeks, I watched Heidi day and night. She seemed sassier than ever, but she still wouldn't walk me home. On the night my neighbors were due back, I did my usual routine with Heidi. For the first time since Smokey's death, I did not ask her to walk me home. I'd decided that it wasn't fair of me to expect her to take Smokey's place. I gave her my usual love and kisses. Heidi kissed me back and I turned to leave. This time, Heidi stood and walked by my side in the same touching way that Smokey had always done. I should have jumped for joy, but I had the feeling something wasn't right. Heidi looked chipper, but when I searched her eyes, I knew in my heart that Heidi was saying goodbye. Although this made no sense, I'd had enough otherworldly experiences with animals to trust the feeling in my gut. When her collar beeped, we sat on the gravel and held each other tight. Heidi licked the tears that streamed down my face. I thanked her for being such a loving dog, told her I'd miss her, and asked her to give Smokey my love. Still, I hoped I was wrong. We snuggled together until I could get up the courage to leave. When I turned the corner out of sight, Heidi let out a mournful, Smokey howl that sent chills down my spine. The following day, our hearts broke all over again when our neighbors drove Heidi to the pet hospital. Later, they phoned to tell us that Heidi had passed away from the same cancer that took her sister. I was devastated, but I also found great comfort in knowing that Heidi and Smokey were together again. Most of all, I felt grateful that Heidi had walked me home for the first and last time so we could say our goodbyes. Jill Burns. 5. Angels don't always have wings. Angels appear in many different forms to hold your hand through the difficult times. Doreen Virtue. In 1972, I was spending the summer in Passau, Germany, studying at the Goethe Institute. Passau is a lovely little city that sits on the border between Germany and Austria, right at the confluence of the Inn, the Ilz, and the Danube rivers in a hilly part of southern Bavaria. From the tops of the cliffs above the rivers, one can see three bands of color floating downstream for several miles. The flower-filled garden of the Institute sits on one of those hills, and the views from there are breathtaking. One particular evening, though, I wasn't thinking about the view.
I'd stayed late that night for one of the cultural activities the Institute puts on for its students. Feeling warmed by conversation and a couple of the excellent local brews, I was ready to walk the 2 miles home. Normally, walking around a city in Germany even today is safe for single women regardless of the time of night, because lots of locals are out and there's an active police presence on foot, even in the quieter parts of town. People stop and talk to each other. So I thought nothing of setting off on my own through the mild summer night to get back to the house I shared with several other students. I set off at a brisk pace, enjoying the night sounds and scents. My path took me through one of the more tired parts of town, with lots of cheap restaurants and Kneipen, pubs, that serve food and lots of beer. Normally, I just walked through, nodding to people on the street, and would make my way home without a problem. But this night, as I walked past one of the Kneipen, 4 young men noticed me wobbling past in my short skirt and platform shoes. They called out a few rude things, but I ignored them and kept walking. Instead of ducking back into the Kneipe, they came out and started to follow me. I walked faster, but so did they. I turned up and down a few streets hoping to lose them, but they followed me like bloodhounds. After the 4th or 5th turn, I knew I was in trouble, and started praying more fervently than I had in a long time. The young men were catcalling and jogging to catch up with me as I was almost at a run now. Suddenly, from one of the darkened yards along the residential street, a huge German shepherd came bounding out. He was barking excitedly, wagging his tail and circling me like he'd been waiting for me to come home. I slowed down to pet the dog, who licked my hands repeatedly. Then I started walking again, but this time the dog fell in beside me. If I sped up, so did he. If I slowed down, he did too. Now, I'd never been a huge dog lover. Big dogs especially tended to scare me. But at that point, I could have hugged that dog. What was even more unusual was that dogs were not allowed to run free in German cities. Where had he come from? And why did he act as if I were a long-lost friend? The young men spotted the dog, slowed to a walk, and then turned down the street at the next corner. I was relieved and expected the dog to get tired of my company and go home. But he didn't. In fact, he walked beside me close enough so I could rest my hand on his massive head up and down those hills and along all the winding streets until I got to my door. He walked with me for at least 30 minutes. As we approached my door, I slowed down to pull my key out of my purse. The dog kept his pace and walked right past my house without even looking at me. I watched him vanish into the darkness as if he'd never existed. Coincidence or divine intervention? I know what I think. Deborah Kellogg. 6. Always with me still. If you have a dog, you will most likely outlive it. To get a dog is to open yourself to profound joy and, prospectively, to equally profound sadness. Marjorie Garber. Everyone saw it. The way he looked at me, followed me everywhere, hung on my every word. Strangers looked at us and said things like, "You only get one like that," or "He's a keeper," or "Look at the way he looks at you. His eyes never leave your face." Even my husband, Maddie, reminded me regularly that I would only get one Jack. Jack was a rescue dog, with a propensity for digging up moles in our backyard. He always looked like he was smiling, and he wagged his tail whether he was excited, happy, or impatient. We unexpectedly lost Jack 1 year ago. 2 days before, he had been out walking as usual with me and our beagle, Sadie. But then, after 2 emergency trips to the vet for his sudden illness, Jack made a nest for himself under our shed. I texted our primary vet, filled her in on the latest details, and asked for her honest, professional opinion. "I think it's time," her text read. Crying, I put my arm around Jack. He stood beside me, squinting in the sun, wagging his tail the way he always did, no matter how he felt. Less than an hour later, Jack was lying on a cold table draped in a blue blanket, with the hairs of other dogs stuck in the fibers. He trembled. I squatted, my face level with his front paws, my hands on his shoulders. I talked to him.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?